This is a Squiz podcast. We're your shortcut to being informed. This week, our podcast is brought to you by BHP. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the production of copper is critical. That's why BHP has committed to solar, wind, and battery agreements to help power their copper mine at Olympic Dam in South Australia. It's happening now at BHP. Visit bhp.com/critical to find out more. The Weekly Wrap is the week in news and what's coming up. I'm Kate Watson.
And I'm Claire Kimball.
Biggest story this week, Claire, was the arrival of the Tassie Devils, that AFL team, not the animal, of course.
No, there's not like a little Tassie Devil running around somewhere that we've taken note of.
Although that would be very on brand.
It would be on brand for us, wouldn't it? Look, it's a story, though, at the intersection of sport and politics, so it's a good one to get across. And it's not the only state where this was a thing this week. We also cover off the former United States President Donald Trump and his comments about our former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd.
Ireland's Prime Minister resigned this week. There's more royal news, and there's a country album dropping at the end of next week that I and a lot of people are pretty pumped for.
Yeehaw!
Oh, God. Claire.
Yep.
Outside of your yee-haw, which you actually wrote into the script.
Yeah, you've got to spell it correctly.
Y-E-E-H-A-W, if anyone's wondering.
Yeah, you've got to get the haw part right.
Yeah, and you've got to really deliver it.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been talking to Squizzes a lot this week about signing up to the Squiz Today newsletter. Thank you to those who have, and actually lots of people have, hundreds and hundreds of you this week. We want to give you another reason to do it, and it has to do with the most clicked link. We talk about this every week in the podcast.
Yeah, it's one of those little secrets about the Squiz that our newsletter and newsletter people know this, but not our podcast audience necessarily. So each week we have a prize in the Squiz Today newsletter. You get a chance to win a $100 gift card if you click a link in the newsletter every single day that we send it during that week. It could be Country Road, it could be Dan Murphy's, it could be Bunnings, which is what it is this week.
Bunnings is something that I need a voucher to at the moment. Every single day, it's our most clicked link. So if we were true to what we say we do in the podcast, which is go to our newsletter and pull out our most clicked link, every week we'd be talking about that link.
Every week we would be talking about the prize.
Yes, exactly. So we actually tell you about the second most clicked link, which was another photography award, something or other this week, and we're going to move right on past
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
But what we want to say is that Squizzes are looking for an opportunity to win, and you might be one of those people.
If you're one of those people who likes a chance to win a prize, this is the way to do it. Sign up to the newsletter. You'll get that opportunity. I reckon let's move into the news. Hey,
biggest story this week was the launch of Tasmania's AFL team. They won't, you've written here, trot around the paddock, but I don't know if a devil trots. Does it?
They'd probably saunter.
I reckon saunter
around.
Slink around the true. Paddock until 2028. But the big unveil was a really big story.
Really big story and huge membership sign-ups too. I know we're looking for newsletter subs. I'd be pretty happy with the kind of return if I was them. In the first 24 hours, more than 100,000 people took out a $10 membership.
Amazing.
And yeah, like they're not getting into the stands or anything like that. It's well too soon for that. But they did get a lot of people signing up. Mm. They reckon they're going to get to 200,000 pretty quickly. And keep in mind, Tassie has just over 500,000 people in the whole state.
And I think a lot of those memberships have come from people outside of Tasmania.
Yes.
I know our producer, Annalise Taylor, she lives in Wagga, but she doesn't have an AFL team, so she thought she might jump on the Tassie Devil bandwagon.
Good opportunity for sure. So to get to the details, the team's going to be called the Tasmania Devils. They're in green and gold. They've got a jersey that's got a map of the state with a T in the middle. Lots of fashion experts giving their view on that this week about whether it's cool or not. The attention it got this week was really bowled over, not just those who have been pushing for this team for years, but also the AFL.
It's interesting, the name Tassie Devils, because that's a very famous cartoon character, of course, called Taz.
Yep.
Obvious questions, although honestly, it wasn't that obvious to me, but there are questions then about copyright, trademarks.
that's been overcome, but it's been a live discussion that AFL's been having with Warner Brothers for a long time now.
Yeah, so Grant O'Brien is the chairman of this new outfit. He's also my former boss at Woolies way back in the day. He used to be the CEO.
Oh, that is the same Grant O'Brien. Gotcha.
Of Woolies, yeah. He talked about all of that this week. He said that they went to Warner Brothers proactively, and it became very clear, he said, during the negotiations that Warner Brothers didn't realise that the character was based on an actual animal.
Which seems odd, but sure.
And once they landed that, things became easier in the discussions.
Well, yeah, because you can't copyright an animal. No one owns that. Also tricky is how this AFL team intersects with state politics. The Tassie election, state election, is on today, Claire.
And they've gone to this early election because the Liberals have been in power. There were two Libs who became independents because they didn't like the price tag of this new stadium that's going to have to be built to accommodate the Tassie Devils. And that put the government into a minority position and very difficult for Premier Jeremy Rockliffe there to get any done.
We've got a Squiz shortcut out on that this week. Alex and Siobhan did a great job explaining the politics of all of that. No doubt more on this next week as the results come in and we know whether this is a big issue for voters. It's expected to be tight. Just to round this all out, it's not the only high price bit of sporting infrastructure that was in the news this week. There's two other big sporting infrastructure stories.
It's funny how these things collide sometimes.
Yeah.
We found out this week that the abandoned 2026 Commonwealth Games cost Victoria more than $589 million.
And I feel like it's worth pausing because there's a lot of numbers in all of this. Yep. But just to be clear, that's the cost to the taxpayer. That's money spent, done, never to be seen again.
Yeah, compensation as well to the Commonwealth Games outfit, all sorts of bits that they had to pay for that. They won't get the games, but they've paid that amount of money. And it doesn't end there. At the time, Daniel Andrews said that the reason that they were canning the games was because of the cost to host was going to blow out to almost $7 billion. And this week, the Auditor General, which is the outfit that looks over these stuff, that pours over the books to make sure that there's transparency around these sorts of claims, it said that that number, that Daniel Andrews claim, was overstated and not transparent.
By about $2 billion.
Yeah.
It's what pretty much everyone except those in the Andrews government said at the time. They said there's no way it was going to cost $6.9 billion, but the actual number looks to have been more around 4.7 or something. So a gross exaggeration of what it might have been. Lots of chatter and anger about the wasted money and the inaccuracy in those claims of what it would cost. Then we go north to Brisbane, Claire. They're kind of stages back from this. Mm. A lot of pain for the government over what they need to build for the 2032 Olympics.
So this has been bubbling around for a while. And what happened a few months ago is that the government up there, the Labor-led government in Queensland, decided to put an independent infrastructure review about what did they need to build to make the games work. That review was done and it said that there needed to be a new multi-billion dollar stadium built at Brisbane's Victoria Park. The government rejected that this week.
The review also recommended replacing the Gabba. That's the famous cricket ground in Brisbane. That was also rejected this week. So Premier Stephen Miles was unapologetic. He said, I ordered this review because I'd heard from Queenslanders that $2.7 billion at the Gabba was too much. So I know that for Queenslanders, $3.4 billion at Victoria Park will also be too much. So I'm ruling that out. The cost of doing these sporting events and what the public will stomach don't seem to be lining up.
Certainly it doesn't line up with what politicians think
What politicians think the public will stomach. Yeah,
it's definitely a live issue, that's for sure. And I reckon that might be enough to make next week's News Club topic.
There's lots in this one. Sporting events and infrastructure and our taxpayer money and what it's spent on is something that relates to all of us and will be in the news until 2032, I imagine, at the very, very least. So News Club next week. We'll see how the news plays out over the weekend, but that's looking like a contender. Three other stories we were talking about this week. Let's start with Donald Trump and his comments about our former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd.
Another big story this week.
Well, you couldn't miss it.
Yeah, if you even consumed just a little bit of news this week, you probably saw that. So these comments were made in an interview with the conservative British politician turned broadcaster Nigel Farage. That was for GB News. I think Australians thought that was on Sky News because it was broadcast on Sky News in Australia, but in the UK, GB News is an entirely different outfit. It's got no connection to News Corp or Rupert Murdoch. And
it's
we mentioned
kind of,
that
it's a news startup.
There was all these conspiracy theories then about Kevin Rudd and Murdoch Press and how that might all feed back into Donald Trump.
GB News is interesting. Like we could go into that, but we kind of decided not to. But it's basically a new startup. It has a similar model to Sky News Australia here, and it's said that it's a conservative sort of opinion channel.
Yeah.
Is the best way to put it. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the interview.
Exactly. So Trump was asked if he would take a phone call from Kevin Rudd as Australia's ambassador in Washington, given that Rudd had said in the past the most horrible things about him.
That's
him
the quote
being
from
Trump.
Nigel Farage. Yeah, that refers to comments Rudd made in the past about Trump being nuts, being the most destructive president in history. Kind of problematic for the relationship if Trump does become president again.
Yep, and his response was, this is Trump's response, he won't be there long if that's the case. I don't know much about him. I heard he was a little bit nasty. I hear he's not the brightest bulb. I think he means light bulb, not like a daffodil bulb. But I don't know much about him. If he's at all hostile, he will not be there long.
If you just saw the grab of Trump's response, actually, you and I were discussing that the question was kind of more interesting than the answer.
Yeah.
The question that was put to Donald Trump did say, our friends at Sky News Australia have asked us to ask this question. So you can see where people are getting very confused.
It seemed very staged.
It seemed staged.
And out of the blue. Yeah. And a bit weird, but here we are.
Cut to us furiously texting each other saying, what was that
all about?
The Albanese government, just to round this out, backed Rudd, said he's doing a great job. It did pull into focus, though, of course, what happens if Trump does win the presidential election in November and what happens to Rudd's job. I also want to point out, though, that this was a tiny, tiny part of that interview. Trump also talked a lot about the royal family, his love for the Queen. He was asked about whether Prince Harry could be deported from the US if he'd lied about taking drugs on his American visa application. That's been a big bit of news in the UK and the US.
Yeah, of course, this all came about with Harry's memoir where he fessed up to having taken drugs in the past, but on his form to enter the US, he said that that was something that he hadn't done. So he kind of dodged answering that directly.
Yeah.
It's been a big one, though, for
sure. Yeah, outside of Australia, he also talked about how he would negotiate with Putin. He talked about NATO, saying that he would commit to NATO, but that point around, I will still make sure they're paying their bit.
Yeah.
Not much talk about his chances of actually becoming president, though. Let's get into that.
Yeah. So Trump is well ahead in the polls against President Joe Biden. It's not a foregone conclusion, though. I think I thought that it was probably very strongly trending in that direction. Mm. But my recommendation this week, the daily podcast from the New York Times, of course, we mention it quite regularly, goes deep into the structural issues in the election and why Trump is actually at a significant disadvantage.
It talks about the RNC. You were talking to me about the RNC, I was supposed to know what that is.
The RNC.
The Republican National Committee.
Yeah, it's the organisational wing of the Republican Party. So it's the campaign people. It's the big fundraising arm. It's the organisation that underpins any candidate. And usually it stays pretty steady no matter who the leader is. It's kind of like the Liberal Party or the Labor Party. The leaders change.
You have your campaign director.
But the party stays pretty stable.
But he's sacked about a third.
Third of the staff just in the last couple of weeks. He's also seen off the chair, Ronna McDaniel, and he's installed his daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, as the co-chair. It's a really big power move on Trump's part. Mm. To even put your family at the top of it is something quite extraordinary. But what this episode of The Daily goes through is talking about, it's not just necessarily Trump's megalomaniac tendencies. There are some real issues with the Republican Party and the campaign. The RNC hasn't put their figures up yet, but they've only got about $40 million in the bank at the end of January anyway for the campaign. You compare that to the Democratic National Campaign, they're heading towards the $200 million mark.
these campaigns eat money.
Yeah.
It costs a lot of money to run a campaign. So the commentators are saying Trump's at a big disadvantage. He has to make up ground fast. He's putting his team into the official party organization to try and do that. Lots of speculation around as well about who Trump's running mate will be. We know it's going to be Joe Biden and Kamala Harris when it comes to the Democrats, but who Trump's running mate will be is another reason we were texting each other this week, Claire. The same text message stream was sort of
melding these things together. And look, it's getting a lot of focus because Trump will be the same, Kamala Harris will be the same, Joe Biden will be the same. The new face whole campaign will be whoever Trump's running mate is. Wednesday night we were chatting about this because 7:30 had a really interesting segment on it. Kristi Noem. Whoa, that was your text message.
Well, the reason I texted that, so Kristi Noem is the governor of South Dakota. The reason I said whoa is because in that report they played some clips of her political ads. It's just so American.
Oh, wow.
Guns, yeah. Anti-establishment. I
like the one of her dressed up as a police officer.
Dressed up as a police officer. I can't do it justice, but I'll put a link to that report in people's episode notes. We'll share it on our Instagram account as well because it is worth a look if you want to understand who the possible running mates might be. I think we're going to leave that one there, Claire. There's so much more we could talk about, get into the royals.
Yep.
That hasn't left the news cycle this week.
Oh, man, it just like every couple of days is another significant bit of news that gets coverage. A sighting of Kate and William at a store in Windsor that saw millions of memes born this week on the theme that she looked very happy, looked healthy. Mm-hmm. There's also news that staff at the hospital where she had her abdominal surgery and then spent a couple of weeks recovering, that staff there had tried to access her private health data. At the end of this week, we saw Sir Keir Starmer, who is the Labour leader in the United Kingdom, who has a good chance of being Prime Minister pretty soon. He called for everyone to back off Kate.
Yeah, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak also said that the Brits need to get behind Kate as she recovers. This whole thing's got to the point where the nation's political leaders have had to intervene. As for where this goes next, Claire, well, I guess it's really up to social media, isn't it?
It seems to be social media who's calling the shots in this one. So let's see how it goes. And I do have to say I had a bit of a snort this week when reports surfaced about speculation building that Kate's return to public duties will happen in the coming days, if not weeks. And it's like, yeah, like
that's when she said.
That's what she said. Yeah. After Easter, she would be returning to work. So, yeah, it's just not dropping out of the news, that's for sure.
We went deep on this in News Club this week. You spoke to Lizzie Robertson from ITV, that's a big network in the UK. You'd interviewed her about that sort of uncomfortable dance between the media and the royals. Great, great chat with her. She's so insightful on how the news of the royals happens.
Mm. She was really clear. I thought the point that sticks with me, that there's no invisible contract between the media and the royals. Mm. I think Harry and Meghan had done a really good job talking about that relationship, saying there's some sort of invisible contract where certain royals are put into the focus and the media's told to go after them, that there's some kind of arrangement about how news is actually covered. And she was really clear that's just not true.
Yeah, there's lots that you unpack in that interview. It's in this feed in News Club. Have a listen to it if you're into the royal stuff. Claire, while we're in that neck of the woods, Ireland's Prime Minister Leo Varadkar resigned this week. I'm sure Siobhan will put me up on my pronunciation of his name. Siobhan, you're very welcome to do that in our Monday morning call. That was a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I have really clear memories of you and me talking about him on Squiz Today.
You told me that I should have clear memories of this and I don't know why. It's gone.
We just started the podcast. We had to get our head around how to pronounce all sorts of things. Taoiseach, which is the Irish way of saying prime minister. He was Ireland's youngest prime minister. He was 38 in 2017 when he was first elected. He was Ireland's first openly gay leader, the first of South Asian heritage. His father is Indian. He was a bit of a symbol of Ireland's modernisation.
Politics has caught up with him. He's led the country twice. His party's in trouble as they head towards an election year. The context here is the government lost two referendums in early March. They were simultaneous, but two questions.
Yeah.
One would have removed language about women's duties being in the home, and the other broadened the definition of family beyond marriage. It's easy to think this demonstrates a rise in conservative ideals in Ireland. It's not that simple. If you read into the issue, it seems to be that for many people, the government didn't explain the changes very well.
Sounds all a bit familiar, doesn't it? Referendums and governments explaining questions.
That has something that we might have talked about a little bit last year.
Exactly.
We'll leave that one there. In the weekly wrap, Claire, we always have a segment on what's coming up in the news so you can get ahead of the game. It's a short week next week as we head into Easter. Good Friday is the first public holiday, then Easter Sunday. Easter, of course, is an important date in the Christian calendar. It commemorates the resurrection of Jesus from the dead.
I thought it was about chocolate.
Well, it is about chocolate, but it's also a religious holiday.
Stuff
exactly.
As well.
Yep. I'm having a few people over for a barbecue on Saturday.
Nice.
And I was reminded that you can't buy takeaway alcohol on Good Friday. Did a bit of a Google. Different laws for different states.
Yeah, it's a long-standing position, but trading hours and laws around all that sort of stuff have changed. It's kind of a day and age thing, I guess.
It's interesting. Tassie, you can buy it all fine. I think South Australia, all fine. New South Wales, no takeaway alcohol. Oh, Queensland, wow. You have to have a meal with a drink or something. Like, it's all different everywhere, but I just didn't know that.
There you go.
That's just
learning things.
Bit of fun facts. Moving on.
Tassie election, mentioned that. That's on today. Tomorrow, the Formula One race. They've, of course, had their qualifiers. They've been sort of going around the track since Thursday. That race, of course, is on in the afternoon, so check that out.
It's already started, as you say. It's a really big deal in Melbourne.
Mm.
It's a really big deal for lots of people. It's grown from about 200,000 attendees 5 years ago to 450,000 now. You're one of those ones that got on the Drive to Survive bandwagon.
I haven't ever been to the F1 race in Melbourne, but I have to confess a couple of years ago, I certainly went down the rabbit hole of Googling tickets and all of that off the back of
Drive to Survive. Yeah, on Netflix. Yeah. There was a piece I read earlier in the week saying that many of the new fans are young women. So really
like
interesting.
Me. Young women.
You're young. I think you're young.
Let's roll with it.
It's an interesting demographic shift for a very old sport. From fast cars to country music, Claire, Beyoncé's country album drops on the 29th of March. Which is next Friday, so I think it might drop on Saturday for us.
That's Saturday our time.
It's called Cowboy Carter. I'm excited.
I can tell how excited
I'm excited. I love Beyonce and I love country music.
So. I really enjoyed Texas Hold'em, the first single off that. She's cited some other collaborations as well. So
yeah, for that
excited
album.
To see.
Leaving entertainment, back to the business of politics. Federal Parliament sitting next week. A couple of busy days at the press club. Mary Wooldridge, who is the CEO of Woodgia. We talked about her a lot a few weeks ago when the gender pay gap data was released. She's speaking on accelerating gender equality in the workplace. That's on Tuesday. Then on Thursday, we've got Amy Pope. She's the Director General of the International Organization for Migration. The topic, unleashing the potential of migrants. Migration is a big topic of conversation at the moment.
Yeah, and will continue to be. There's this crunch of how many people have we got? We had a really big bump of people coming to Australia after COVID. How they find housing, how they're best plugged into the workforce, what our pipeline looks like going forward and how it's tied to economic growth. It's a really big one.
Yeah, sure is. Squiz recommends, before we get started, I have to ask. I actually was wondering this morning. How are the Bald Eagles going?
One of the three eggs broke.
Broke?
Yeah.
Was it?
Eagle had to chuck out all the shell.
Oh,
out of the nest.
How did it break?
They reckon probably hadn't actually fertilised and wasn't developing. So it's one of those natural selection things.
Okay.
They got rid of that. So the eagles aren't now sitting on that egg. They've still got two. If you don't know what we're talking about, last week I recommended tuning into the US Wildlife's camera. They've got a live cam on a bald eagle nest in West Virginia. They're expected to hatch their eggs in a couple of weeks. So one broke, two to go.
Hopefully they get there.
I know.
Yeah, interesting.
I'm invested now.
You've given us your recommendation for this week,
yep.
The daily episode on what's happening at the RNC, because we all know what that is now and how that could impact the US election. For me, my recommendation is Galah magazine. So I've been a subscriber to Galah for a while now. Mm. It arrived in my letterbox last week and I sat down on the weekend with a cup of tea. I read it and I was reminded, as I am every time it lands in my mailbox of how much I enjoy it. So for those who don't know, Galar is a fellow independent publisher. The magazine's all about celebrating regional Australia and the people who live there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful magazine. It's got a very art focus, but the stories about businesses, farmers, also the vibrant centres of regional Australia where, you know, they've got big populations and great restaurants and great galleries and all sorts of terrific lifestyles there. It's a great magazine, that's for sure.
That's a great recommendation. $90 a year, I think it is.
Three mags.
For three magazines. Yep. Annabelle Hickson, who's the editor, writes newsletters. It's a whole thing. And I think in this world where we are on our phones and we're scrolling and we're seeing a lot, it's just so nice to sit down and read something properly.
It's the only mag I get. I used to get about five magazines a month and it's the only one that I still get.
Yeah, so Galar Magazine's the recommendation from me this week. Before we get into what might be in the news next week, a message from our podcast advertiser, BHP. This week, they're keen to share with Squizzers how the resources they mine are key to the energy transition to renewable energy.
Yeah, we often hear about the push towards renewable energy, but what doesn't get as much attention is the role resources play in making that transition possible. Take steel, for instance. It's a key material used in the construction of renewable energy infrastructure, as well as in bridges, transportation, hospitals, and schools. And a big part of it comes from iron ore.
BHP says the importance of responsibly produced Australian iron ore is clear.
And by that, they mean reducing the greenhouse gas emissions associated with iron ore production. It's why BHP has committed to a solar and battery agreement to help power their port facilities at Port Hedland.
It's happening now at BHP. And if you want to learn more, visit bhp.com/critical. You'll find that link in your episode notes. Squiz Press, Claire, we've plugged ourselves a bit in this podcast. We've got the Royal interview.
Yes.
We've got Royal stuff in News Club. We've got please sign up to our newsletter, all of that. How about we let people know what we're doing over Easter, which is nothing.
We're taking next weekend off.
We are. No weekly wrap next weekend.
No.
And then the following week, we won't have a specific News Club episode, but we do have an interview with Bryce Corbett, who is the director of Squiz Kids, a colleague of ours. And he is the custodian of NewsHounds, our media literacy program. I talked to him about his career as a journalist, his career in book publishing, his life as a gossip columnist, his life in Paris, but how it's all led him to be very passionately committed to media literacy for the next generation.
So if you've listened to News Club for the last few weeks, you would have heard our episode about Meta and what's happening in terms of support for publishers, particularly independent publishers. When you then extend that out to our commitment to Squiz Kids and NewsHounds particularly, which is our media literacy program, Bryce is at the forefront of that. You're going to hear us probably talking a lot about NewsHounds and Squiz Kids in the coming weeks and months because of all of these issues that are swinging around about how do people get news? How do we make sure that the next generation can tell misinformation, disinformation, and real news and be informed citizens? We're really committed to it.
It's a great chat with Bryce. And even as someone who's known him for many, many years now, there were parts of that chat that I learnt a lot about him.
There you go.
And his experience. So that will be out. And then we'll be back with the weekly wrap on the 6th of April. We will chat to you next week. Kate Watson, co-host of News Club and The Weekly Wrap, jumping in here to say thank you for listening to our podcasts first and foremost. And if you like them, we'd really appreciate it if you could share them. Tell your mates about us. Tell your family. Tell your barista. Tell your hairdresser. Whoever you think might be interested in the news that we cover. You telling people about us is still the number one way we grow. Thanks in advance.